As we remember 2015, we're in Dungarvan. I always take my hat off to the determination, the joy and the ingenuity of Dungarvan, which historically has a very small Church of Ireland population, and yet there is a real sense that the church belongs to the town and the town needs the church, and all kinds of ways are found to create connections and to welcome people in. And for example, there's a major food festival in more normal years in Dungarvan, and based on that there was a wonderful idea of the parish running Victorian tea rooms in the vestry and the aligning rooms in Dungarvan Church. And there was something very lovely about the culinary experience, and very appropriate about the atmosphere of the ambiance. So hats off to people who do clever things to make people come in and perhaps open their eyes to the beauty of what they encounter. 2015 was the year one of the great referendums of recent times in Ireland, the equal marriage referendum. The first such democratic decision by referendum in terms of the widening of the definition of marriage in any country comparable to our own. Society very quickly had got far ahead of where the church was on these matters. And yet in the following years, the sky didn't fall. Equal marriage was widely accepted. Obviously, there were dissenting conscientious voices, but it was widely accepted as being a public good. And there, I think, the discussion must start. Not in terms of being over-curious about people's private lives, but respecting their commitment and their tenderness, and realising that public good is the consequence of making appropriate legal arrangements for people who wish to enter into long-term mutual commitments who are of the same gender. So, recognising the wide and geographically varied views that exist in the church, what do we do now by way of response? I don't think we can do nothing. I've mentioned this in earlier reflections, although I don't think we will travel in a hurry to where some of our other Anglican partners may be. But I hear things quietly happening in the diocese which are locally sensitive and which might be perhaps perceived as very inadequate by those who are in the particular situation, and yet I think they can also recognise that it is a genuine attempt to be generous and to do all that can be done. For example, appropriate greeting of newly married couples at the peace when they return to church after their civil marriage. Perhaps a cake afterwards, along with the coffee after the service, if we ever get back to having coffee after the service again in the foreseeable future. Appropriate intercessions for them during the prayers of the church, mentioned in the Diocesan magazine. We can do many things that show our support of and recognition of people who've made conscientious legal commitments, even if we can't, as it were, yet be the place where those commitments are witnessed and celebrated. Perhaps we could provide some further official authorised prayers to mark the moment. And sometimes I think we should never forget that it's not entirely up to the clergy or even the synods what goes on in churches. Sometimes just by leaving church doors open and allowing people to come in and do their own prayerful thing, sometimes small groups of people may just wish to wander into churches and themselves pray and dedicate themselves and seek a sense of God's presence and guidance. And who could gainsay that? It's easy to get weary of this whole discussion and accept the deadlock and try to be pastoral, but it doesn't go away. For so many people, and especially in my experience, younger people see in us a sort of context of institutionalized discrimination, which therefore diminishes our credibility in other areas where we want to speak prophetically to the world about justice. And I'm also conscious that these issues pastorally don't just apply across the board in the church, but can be very significant in the lives of the clergy for whom I care too. Anyway, 2015 was a remarkable moment when society certainly faced the truth about itself and strove to do so in a joyful and essentially inclusive way. Meanwhile, I think the church has in many ways got behind in all of this. It's lost its handle on marriage, which in many ways, I've said this before, has for very many people, same-sex and opposite-sex moved into other contexts and other venues. And so a pastoral opportunity is lost. And in many ways, we are conniving at handing over the spirituality that should surround marriage ceremonies to others. And we are, let's be blunt about it, missing many's a trick in making those connections. Finally, some would say that the way forward in this is to make compulsory civil marriage compulsory for everyone getting married in this jurisdiction, as happens in many indeed European jurisdictions where the civil part of the marriage is never done by the church. If we had compulsory civil marriage for all, then the church could make its pastoral response to the reality of those individual marriages as it saw fit and as was locally appropriate. After all, when we are born, we are registered with the state, but we may come or bring our children to seek baptism. When we die, our departure is registered with the state, but we may be brought to the church for Christian burial. Perhaps the church does its work best by responding pastorally to external legal requirements rather than by trying to, as it were, steer the law itself.